Blog Talk Radio. Hi, this is Marnie Swedberg, and I welcome you to Marnie and Friends, a place where leaders share practical, helpful, and encouraging ways to get anything important done faster, better, and smarter. Right now, I encourage you to sit back, buckle up, and join us for fun, laughter, practical help, and clear thinking, the kind of discussion that focuses our attention off of the fluff and onto the most important stuff in life. Again, welcome to Marnie's Friends. Let's get going. Hi, everybody, and welcome back to another edition of Marnie's Friends. This is Marnie Swedberg, and I'm excited to have you with me this afternoon. I'm also grateful to those of you who listen to the archived shows. We used to do these as live teleconferences, and what happened is as time progressed, we found that a lot of people couldn't call at the certain time, and so we switched over to the radio talk show format, which is working a lot better for us. We have lots of people who join us during the show, but way more of you listen to it archived. So because I'm always talking to people who are here with me live, I want you to know that I appreciate you, whether you're here live or whether you're listening in later. Today's show is kind of unique in that I don't have a guest with me. This is the last day of the book launch for Feeling Loved, Connecting with God in the Minutes You Have. And we've had a great week, been doing interviews all over and blog posts, appearances, and things like that. And I've been giving away lots and lots of books. This is the last day we're going to give away a book. We're going to do so later in the call today. So if you haven't already done so, you can go over to marnie.com and register over there to be included in that drawing for a free book later on. And if you didn't get a free book, I hope that you will check out purchasing a book for yourself or to give as gifts or even to take your Bible study group through. What we're going to do today during the call is I'm going to give you some of the background information on the book, take you through some different aspects of the usefulness of the content of the book, and encourage you to share it with as many people as you can. The book is really ideal for a two-hour read by yourself or else for a 10-week Bible study if you're taking a group through it. At the end of each chapter, it has conversation starters, and they can be conversation starters just between you and God, or they can be conversation starters between you and others in a group who have read the chapter on their own during the week and come together to review it. The book has 10 chapters that are each could be taken one per week, and then it has a whole section of prayers that can be read one per day or multiples per day. There's six sections, so you could divide that up a section per week or one prayer per section so that you would read a prayer one day a week. However you want to do it, it works really great, and the prayers are personable, easy to personalize in that you can put someone's name in there if you're praying for a child or for a friend. You can put their name right into a lot of the prayers. The book is my heart toward women who want to know Jesus better. And why did I write this book? I want to just let you know that I wrote it for you or for anyone you know who might be aware that there is a God, aware that he loves you, aware that he wants to maybe know you better, have a relationship with you, but you just don't know how to get closer to him. You are the person for whom this book is written. And I meet ladies like you all the time. And I just want to encourage you that there is a way to get closer to God, to learn more about him, but more importantly, to feel the love that he's extending toward you all of the time. We're going to go through some information today. We're going to start with the first thing is what you can do step by step to feel God's love every single day from now on, no matter how distant God has seemed until now and no matter how busy you are. And I wanted to start with that one because it's just so important that you do understand that God does love you, that he is generating love in your direction. And when we think about that concept, it's easy for us to say, no, I don't think he really is, or I think he's generating love kind of globally but not toward me, or I never feel loved by God. I don't feel that in my life. I'm not sure that that's even true. But the fact is that it is true. And in order for you to feel that love, there's some steps that you need to take in order to accomplish it. And the very first step is to recognize that God is extending love to you all the time, even if you're not feeling it. And the example that I want to use is that it's true that at our restaurant, we own a Mexican and Italian restaurant. And when we get there at 9 o'clock in the morning, we start making food for people. And by 11 o'clock, when the door opens, you know, we unlock the front door and people can come in and start having lunch or, you know, snacks or whatever. From 11 o'clock until we close the door at night, until we lock up at night, there is food there for people. And whether they know it or not, whether they take advantage of it or not, whether they believe it or not, doesn't matter. We have food for people at our restaurant every day from 11 o'clock until we close. That's exactly the same as how it is with God's love toward you. You know, there are people who don't think about my restaurant for weeks on end, maybe. Maybe they don't ever go there. But the fact is, the food is there for them if they want to go. And that's exactly how it is with our relationship with God. His love is there for us if we choose to tap into it, and it's a choice. The first thing you have to remember is that God is loving you all the time. Whether you feel it or not is really honestly up to you. It's a choice that you have to make, and it's a choice that you can make. In chapter 2 of the book, I give the 5 steps toward feeling loved by God. First of all, is spend time with him. You really cannot get to know someone well without spending time together. And one of the things that I know as a super busy woman myself is that finding time to spend time with God is not always an easy thing to do. In fact, it always is going to take a commitment. But I don't want to have you be discouraged by that or feel like, I just can't spend hours sitting with my Bible on my lap or going to conferences or things like that. I just can't. I want to tell you that there's all kinds of ways for you to connect with God just in the minutes you have. There are things that you can do that don't take any additional time. I'll give you one example, and I share a lot of these in the book, just from my own life, things that I do. First of all, when I'm showering and dressing in the morning, I use those few minutes to connect with God in a specific way. I put on the spiritual armor at the same time as I'm putting on my clothes for the day. That's one time when I connect with God. Another time I connect with God through the day is I eat with him. So as I'm taking a bite, I'm praising God for the food that's going into my mouth. I'm enjoying that bite with him as if it was just the only bite I was going to have in my whole life. It's just such a wonderful thing that I have that bite of food. I just celebrate times with him. There are other times when I actually do sit down with my Bible on my lap or go to church or I do that. But I want you to know that you don't have to be doing that kind of thing all the time. There's ways to incorporate your love life with God right into the ebb and flow of the day and to just include him. And the illustration that I love the best is the dolphin. If you think about a dolphin, is an air breather who lives in water. And I always say we are prayer breathers who live on earth. We're heaven breathers who live on earth. And we have to go up for air all the time, and then we can come back down and have joy down here between breaths. But prayer should be like a breath, that you can't live very long without it. You have to keep going up for air. So number one is spending time together, and in the book I talk a lot about how you can go about doing that. Then number two is learn each other's history, and God already knows all about your history, but you don't know everything about God. Even if you think you know a lot about him, we will never, ever know everything about God. So learning about his history is one of the ways that we can grow closer to him and really start to feel his love. And what I say for myself is that, you know, I can relate to practically every person in the Bible who's ever loved God, because as I read their stories, as I understand how God related to them in their times of pressure or stress, how God provided for them, it makes me more and more aware that God is here with me, that God is loving me, and I can feel that in a way that I couldn't before I understood that story. The third way is to invest more. And I just encourage you, and this is true of anything in your life, if you don't love something enough, invest more. If you don't care about something enough, invest more. Investing more is just a great way to grow closer to someone, and it's a great way to grow closer to God. Number four is to discover God's character qualities, gifts, and strengths. And God has so many wonderful qualities about him, and they're not always readily obvious because we can't see him. He's invisible. So unlike a person who we're getting to know, it takes a little conscious effort, investment, to get to know God better. But as we discover his character qualities, the wonderful gifts that he is and that he's giving us, as well as his strengths and how he wants to use those to help us, we feel more and more loved. Finally, when you're growing to love someone, getting to know them better, you have to learn to love them despite their weaknesses or shortcomings. Now, God does that for us through Jesus Christ, but we need to do that toward God, even though he doesn't have any weaknesses or shortcomings. I talk a lot in the book about how a lot of times I really dislike him. I dislike a choice he's made. I dislike something that's happening to me in my life that he's allowed. And I have come to understand that we have to be really, really honest about that with God, that we need to let him have our hearts in a really honest fashion because he knows all of our thoughts anyway. It's very difficult for us to grow closer to him if we don't yield those thoughts to him all the time. We're going to take a short break and come back with why the current economic downturn can mean great things for your spiritual life, even if you're facing the worst possible financial stress of your life. This economic downturn can be a good thing. We'll find out why in just a moment. Are you a leader, an author or speaker, a mom or Sunday school teacher? Leadership Club is my way of providing encouragement, practical help, and solid God focus to as many people as I possibly can. Together we are learning how to be all that Christ created us to be, in and through his power and presence in our lives. I encourage you to join us at marnie.com. Have a great day. Hi, we're back. Had a little hiccup in the system here, but we're back. Thank you for joining me today. This is Marnie Swedberg talking about feeling loved, connecting with God in the minutes we have. Before the break, we were talking about the step-by-step plan to feeling more of God's love every single day from now on. And right now, we're going to talk about how the economic downturn can mean great things for your spiritual life. And you're thinking, how in the world can that be? You obviously, Marnie, don't have a clue to what's going on in the economy. But I'm telling you, we are feeling it. It's very, very interesting to own your own businesses and to employ not only wonderful people, but close friends and other people that we know are God's close friends, and yet have the economy be hitting the bottom line so hard that from payroll to payroll, it's like, wow, I wonder if we're going to be able to make it this month. I wonder if we're going to be able to make it. So I do really comprehend the pain that some of you are experiencing. The other thing is, more than ever before, we're giving away scholarships at marnie.com. People who've been members for a long time are sending in notes and saying, I'm afraid I'll have to cancel my membership. We simply cannot afford it. And a lot of times I get to hear the story, our business closed, or my job ended, I don't have a job anymore, or we have more family members living with us than we've ever had before. There's all kinds of reasons, and right now the economy is a really tough thing. I just want you to know that I do understand, I do hear you, and that God hears you, which is the most important thing. In the book, on page 23, if you're following along, I have a quote in there that I just love. It's a definition of a Pharisee. And boy, does this ever sound like me. But the definition is this: a Pharisee is one who wants to get the right formula and do it right and fix everything and feel very wonderful. And that is so me. That's how I always want it to be. But emotions are not meant to always have us feel very wonderful. A lot of times, emotions are meant to draw us toward God, and we see them as something that pushes us away from God. Once again, just like in feeling loved and getting to know him, our emotions can either draw us closer or farther away from God, and it's a choice that we have to make. So one of the things I wanted to just share with you in this segment is just a little part here about feelings. This is from page 41 in the book, and there are five things that I've come to learn about feelings that I'm just going to read for you out of the book. Number one, feelings are. They come plowing into my life without warning, permission, or balance. They simply show up and take over my brain. Number two, feelings can be easily manipulated, both from internal and external influences. They intensify based on circumstances, my understanding of the facts, or a perceived threat of any kind. Number three, feelings are important. I always want to be able to laugh and cry. If I'm afraid, I want to know it and admit it. If I feel hurt when wronged, that's wonderful because it proves I'm alive. Feelings in themselves are not wrong. They are vital to a healthy life. Number four, feelings are often inaccurate. They are based on individual pieces of information funneled through my limited knowledge and experience. Upon collecting the rest of the facts or viewing a situation from a different perspective, my feelings about it can change. And number five, most importantly, feelings are the number one thing triggering me to talk with God. Every intense emotion is an invitation for a conversation with God. So I just want to encourage you, no matter how tough things have gotten, no matter how tight the budget is or how non-existent it is, I want you to know for sure that right now, during this economic downturn, is a wonderful time for you to grow closer to God. We're going to come back and talk about that in a little bit, but first, after this next break here, we're going to come back and talk about the personality types and how to worship God more naturally based on your personality type. We'll be right back. It has been my great joy to interview experts on all sorts of topics. The segments with branding gurus Linda Lopeck and Karen Saunders provided over $1,000 worth of training. The segment with literary agent David Sanford, again, worth over $500 by itself. The email management training with Marcia Egan was a huge hit. If you're already a member, then you're all set. But if not, check it out at leadershipattitudes.com. Leadershipattitudes.com. Welcome back. This is Marnie, and we're talking about feeling loved, connecting with God in the minutes you have. We're to the segment of the program where we're going to talk about personality training right now, and this is one of my favorite subjects ever to talk about. I have, ever since I was a young person, a teenager, I have spent a lot of time taking personality tests and trying to understand my personality mostly, but also how my own personality relates and interacts with other people. What I found really changed my life. In the book, I talk about being a young mom and really being confused about how to parent my children, how to be a good mom. And personality testing really helped me to understand, first of all, how I needed to come at it, but secondly, of all, how I needed to behave toward each one in order to encourage them, in order to help them to help me be a good mom. Now, if you haven't already done so, over at Marnie.com, if you click on the free gifts, you can download the personality type test there. It's a one-page test that will only take you 5 or 10 minutes to fill that out. And by the time you're done, you'll just add up your columns. You'll have, at the bottom, you'll have a total. You turn to the back page then, and it's all in a PDF format. So it's very easy for you to download. And on the back page, you will identify which categories, which types of personalities that you fall into mainly. Everybody is a blend. There isn't probably hardly anybody in the world who can say, I'm totally one personality or the other. We all have character qualities that cross across the personality profiles. But you're going to land predominantly in one or possibly two categories. You might, like me, I'm pretty close in three categories, and then I kind of fall off the board on the one category. I'm still there, but not quite in the same level. But even for me, I have a highest and a second and a third, like that, and a fourth. So what I did is I combined everything that I had, I mean, I can't say everything, but the gist of what I have learned over the years about personality training, created this test of my own, and then have a personality type overview that you can go through there. But in the book, what I did is I took it another step and did how the personalities worship God. And so what we find is that every personality has a different way of worshiping and connecting with God. Once you know what your personality type is, you will get a real kick out of reading how the different personalities relate to God. If you are working with a women's ministry or church group or even employees or even your own children, if you're working with any other human beings, knowing this information can really help you. If you are a worship planner at your church, reading through this can be very helpful to you because you will recognize that Other people have different ways of connecting with God, while worship music is your favorite way, and honestly, it's one of my favorite ways. It's not the only way, and it's not even the only good way. And actually, for some people, it's not a way at all. It's just not something that's inside of them. Speaking of worship music and that kind of thing, we were at an alumni weekend for Dave's alma mater, Oak Hills Bible College, and that's where he's teaching right now as an adjunct professor. But we were there, and we were sitting with Dr. Chitrud, who's one of my favorite people in the whole world. I just love him. But he is such a brilliant man. But one of the things that he mentioned to me during our many conversations was that music to him does not sound like music. Music to him sounds like clanging pans or a very bad sound, like fingernails scratching on a board. It, to his ears, he isn't capable of hearing music the way that I hear music. It doesn't sound like that to him. It sounds like a bad thing. And for some of us, we can, in our own personality styles, in our own personality traits, or our love languages even, we could go that far. We communicate in a certain way, and it makes sense to us, and it sounds good to us, and it doesn't sound like, you know, fingernails on a chalkboard. But to somebody else, the very thing that thrills my heart, you know, makes them kind of cringe. And so it's important for us to understand that there are many different personality types, and that just because we are built one way, it doesn't mean everybody else is built the same way. And it's important to use language that is healthy. So instead of "you're so weird," you can say, "Wow, that's really different from how I connect with God," or "Wow, that's really different from how I perceive that thing that just happened to us or what we're going through. I would have said it like this." And to help each other see, it is so incredible how God has made each of us so different. Just Tuesday, I was with my daughter Karen when she was being fingerprinted for a job she's getting at a bank. And just looking at those fingerprints and how, you know, there's no two fingerprints in the whole world of all the people that are here that are the same. It's just incredible how God has taken so much time and effort to make sure that we're all different. And then what do we like to do? What we like to do is we like to make everybody just the same. We like to put everybody into the same box and have us all just appear exactly the same as each other, handle life the same way, appreciate the same things, experience the same things the same way, and it just isn't going to happen that way. So what we're going to do right now, I'm going to assume that you've already taken the personality type overview and you've determined whether you are a fun personality, a leader, an organizer, a stabilizer, which of those are predominant for you. And I'm going to go ahead and read off of pages 77 and 78 in the book the different ways that these personalities worship. This has been so helpful to me, and I hope it will be helpful to you too. Fun personalities. The fun personality worships like this. "I love to talk, so listening during long group prayer times is tough. In my conversations with God, I do most of the talking. Journaling is not my thing. I scribble notes everywhere. My prayer life is like my life, constantly on, yet sporadic. I view God as someone with whom to have a friendship, a close personal relationship. I worship using my senses. I love music and movement. I really enjoy Christian novels, but don't ask me to read a concordance. When I read the Bible, I prefer a modern translation. I'm sort of scatterbrained, so I sometimes forget about God for a while. God's grace is my favorite topic. Leaders in worship." Now, this is for the person with the leadership bent of their personality. "I sometimes work so hard for God that I miss out on enjoying Him. Scheduled prayer times are the only way to go. Group prayer times are great if I can be in charge. I often struggle with God because He doesn't always want to line up with my agenda. I like knowing that God is in control all the time, so I don't have to be. I don't think much about grace, but I love the concept of justification. I worship through activism. You will find me serving God in protest marches or standing up for social responsibility. I worship in action. Solitude comes hard for me. I often feel closest to God while working on intense projects. I sometimes journal. I prefer devotional books and Bible software. If you have an organized personality, you worship this way. I feel most grateful to God when things are on time and going as planned. I love being near God in nature. The organized rhythm of music frees me to focus on God with my whole heart. I often feel I disappoint God. Just like every Bible hero, I seem to get pretty low at times. Just like they did, I hold on to my faith and find him faithful. My greatest desire is to understand God more and more. I enjoy structure. The more, the better. I often feel insecure in my prayer life. I sometimes feel confident I'm doing it the right way, but I wish I could get this nailed down once and for all. I love to write, to journal, write letters to God, write stories, and so on. I like deep thinkers like John Piper, Oswald Chambers, and John Bunyan. I use a study Bible. I am sometimes too busy trying to comprehend God to rest in his love for me. And then if you have a stabilizer or peaceful personality, that you probably worship in these ways. Prayer is central to my peace. I prefer to soak God in through Bible reading, prayer, scripture songs, and praise music. Memorized prayers bring me comfort. I either need to teach a Bible study or be involved in a structured study like those by Beth Moore, or else I don't seem to do it. I like the easiest paths the best. I immediately loved the fact that God was sovereign. Being at peace with God is my primary goal. I love to go to church, but it's sometimes disappointing because I prefer quieter music, communion, and contemplative prayer. I don't journal, but I do usually write answers into Bible study workbooks. Well, I hope you've appreciated this insight into the different personalities and how they worship. We're going to take a short break and come back and talk about the website you can use to quickly and easily memorize any Bible verse anytime you want. We'll be right back. Are you registered to receive the Marnie Minute? Have you sometimes missed out on training or connection opportunities because you didn't know about them in advance? Visit Marnie.com and select Free Updates to receive email notifications so you will never miss a beat. That's Free Updates over at Marnie.com. Welcome back. This is Marnie Swedberg. Happy to have you with me today. And I'm always happy to have you along. I wish I could see you. I wish we could sit across the table from each other and enjoy I would be having a Diet Coke. I don't know what you would be drinking. But sometimes it's just fun to get together with somebody one-on-one, and I'd get to pick your brain back a little bit. But I'm grateful that you are here today. And I look forward to meeting you in person, whether that's here somewhere on Earth someday, whether I already have, which would be awesome. If that was already fun for me, if that was the case, or someday in heaven, if that's the case, I'd love to meet you wherever we meet. Here or in the air, I'm going to look forward to having some time with you. And I always say at that time we'll get to hear the rest of the story, and I truly believe that in fact, it's one of the most comforting thoughts that I have is that all the things I'm missing out on here by just being one person in one place at one time, I don't get to be everywhere at once, and I think it'll be awesome to get to heaven and to see the rest of the story, and I think that's what's going to take a lot of our eternity. Is spending time getting to know everybody, all the details that we missed out. God is—he's so into story, you know. I think that he wants us to be able to get into all those stories. And you know how you feel when you're watching a really fantastic movie, a movie that's been done really well, and you know you feel like you're part of it. You can feel the emotions of the actors and all that kind of thing. And I think what's going to be awesome is in heaven, I believe that we'll get to look back over history. Like that through the eyes of almost every person there over time, and that we will see how God was in control the whole time. We'll see the rest of the story, and that's always a huge encouragement to me. Well, I want to take just a few moments here to talk about the scripture memorization tool because it is so fun, for one thing, getting a lot of great feedback about this particular tool. Now, once again, if you go over to Marnie.com and request the free gifts, one of the free gifts is the Marnie Method Memorization Tool. And I've been asked again repeatedly this week, how did you ever come up with that? Did you develop that? Well, you know, lots of questions along those lines. And the answer is yes. I developed it as a combination of learning tools that work for people who have a hard time learning. And I really do have a hard time memorizing and learning things. And this was a system that worked for me when I was a kid. It still works for me now. But what I found was that I would often talk myself out of memorizing a new scripture, out of tackling a new passage because I didn't have the time to set it up myself to do this whole system. What the memorization tool does online is it gives you the opportunity to tap into this already prepared system so that you don't have to take it any time of your own to develop the cheat sheet or the quote card. It will actually build the quote card for you with the formatted verse on the one side, and then you just fold that in half, and on the back side it has the acronyms. That's a terrific tool to learn a new verse. But the other thing is you can do right here online, and this is the part that really was the time-consuming part for me, is I would always use a chalkboard or a whiteboard, and I would erase first the longest word and then the second longest word, and I would be repeating the verse each time all the way through. But it would take a while to get to do all that, and I usually didn't have the right system. You know, I just don't have a chalkboard sitting around or a whiteboard, and so that would be my, you know, slow up. I'd go over to church, put it on the whiteboard like that. This actually does it for you. The system online actually does the whole process for you. So I encourage you to just head over to Marnie.com to request access to the memorization tool and then to go ahead and do that. One thing we did discover as the week was progressing here and more people were using it is that some people were having trouble when they copied and pasted the original text in the acronym version into their Word document in order to print it out in a larger font. What happened to them is that it skewed the layout. So what we found is if you do it in Notepad, it will come out right every time. So just copy and paste it into Notepad, and you'll understand more about that when you get to the site. It will explain it to you there. But Notepad is easily available, and the instructions how to find it on your own computer, again, are right there at Marnie.com in the section that you on the page that you'll get to when you request the memorization tool. And you might be wondering, you know, what should I memorize? I don't know what to memorize. Well, I've included in the book 200 of my favorite passages, verses and passages that I've memorized. I have so many favorites. I couldn't possibly fit them all in here. But there are just so many favorites that I have that you might enjoy, too. Just now I flipped it open. I'm going to read you Psalm 16, 5, and 6. And this is actually the set of verses that Dave said after he asked me to marry him, which is now 28 years ago, amazing. He was asked by our singles group that we are involved in at Grace Church in Edina at the time, in Edina, Minnesota, and they said, we have another engagement, and we were a huge, huge singles group down there. So we have another engagement, and Dave, why don't you stand up and tell us about that? And he stood up, and this is what he quoted to the people in that room. Lord, you have assigned me my portion and my cup. You have made my lot secure. The boundary lines have fallen for me in pleasant places. Surely I have a delightful inheritance. Well, that's Psalm 16, 5, and 6. And what you'll find is that you'll have verses, just like you have songs, you'll have verses that are meaningful to you because they came at a certain time in your life. They're meaningful to you because of the circumstances under which you learned them. They're meaningful to you because as you were learning them, something happened or your life situation changed or there was a trauma or there was a celebration. And this is going to be a verse that you're going to remember for the rest of your life. Also, what happens is as you memorize verses, even if you don't have something like that when you start memorizing the verse, it will simply become a favorite of yours just because you have taken the time to memorize it. It's a great way to meditate on God's Word, and I encourage you to memorize as much Scripture as possible. One of the things that used to kind of bother me was that I knew I couldn't remember them all. I would memorize verses, but then I couldn't keep them fresh in my memory. And the reason I knew that is because when I was a young adult, I had a job, a paramed examiner job, where I would travel about 100 miles a day. I would drive about 100 miles a day. And during those long hours of driving around the Minneapolis-St. Paul area and all the suburbs, what would happen is I would have these quote cards and I would go through them, and I had it set up in a flashcard way where I didn't have to look down just long enough to barely see the reference, and then I would quote the verse and go on to the next one. Anyway, as I was doing that, it would usually take me about 100 miles or, you know, quite a few, over 2 hours to get through the 300 verses. And so I just know that we can't memorize lots and lots of verses and keep them all fresh in our heart. But what I also know is that just the time that you spend meditating on it while you're memorizing it, and the fact that you have once memorized it, is so valuable. So I just encourage you, even if you can't keep it up and keep it memorized forever, that it's worth it to memorize it the first time. We're going to take a little break and come back and talk about the secret prayer that I use to turn every negative event into something of eternal value. We'll be right back after this break. Introducing themillionmileclub.com. Do you travel a lot? Would it make a difference to you if some million milers shared their travel secrets? I thought so. So we started the Million Mile Club for you, for missionaries, for people who travel a lot and could use some insider tips. It's free, it's fun, and it's way helpful. themillionmileclub.com. Well, welcome back. This is Marnie Swedberg. We're talking about feeling love today, connecting with God in the minutes you have. And I'm excited to enter this new section here, which is my secret prayer. I have a whole bunch of secret prayers. I don't know about you, but I call them affirmations. They're prayers that are statements of truth, that are statements that turn my thoughts around when they start heading the wrong direction. And there, I have a whole section in the book of my favorite affirmations. But what I wanted to talk to you about right now, the secret prayer that I use to turn every negative event into something of eternal value, is actually found in the appendix of the book. There's some appendices, and in appendix 2, the question is asked, what do you do when you're attacked? And I just want to read you this little section because it's critically important to me that I understand this. It's changed how I deal with life, knowing this information, and it might help you too. What do you do when you are attacked? I have adopted the King Hezekiah response to any and all attacks. During the reign of King Hezekiah, there was a God-mocking nation that came to fight against Israel. They used fear tactics to dishearten the Israelites and then sent a letter of intimidation to the king. Fortunately, King Hezekiah knew what to do. Number one, he knelt down. Number two, he spread out the attack letter. Number three, he asked God to talk to him about it from his perspective. I've adopted this as my own practice. As soon as I identify a soul threat, I kneel down, lay out the letter or my journal entry about it or whatever on my bed and ask God what he thinks about it. Not surprisingly, God has never been worried about the things that worry me. Instead, he helps me see if there's an element of truth I must own, a sin I must confess, or a wrong I must right. Then he comforts me and assures me of his love. This godly input enables me to react without self-defense or retaliation. It changes everything. Whenever the enemy flings accusation against your big God and his ability to save you, lay the words out before King Jesus and ask him for wisdom, creative solutions, and peace. He is the answer to every question. So if you were going to narrow it down and ask me, what is your secret prayer that you use to turn every negative event into something of eternal value, I would say it is these words. God, talk to me about this from your perspective. And I'll just say that again. God, talk to me about this from your perspective. In the book of Revelation, chapter 3, we have a picture of Jesus standing at a door, and he's knocking. And what he wants to do is he wants to come in and he wants to eat with somebody. And many people view him as knocking at the heart of an unbeliever and saying to someone who hasn't yet come to know him, I want to come in and I want to get to know you. But the reality is that that passage is written to Christians. That passage is written to people who already have a relationship with Christ. So why would someone who already knows Christ have Jesus standing outside of their door knocking and asking to come in and have a meal with them? The only reason it could be is that in that particular area of their thought processes, they've shut the door to him. Somehow, when they hit that particular thing, when they came across that particular challenge or negative thing or huge emotion or whatever it is, the door went shut, and Jesus stands outside that thought. He stands outside that emotion. He stands outside that door, and he's knocking, and he's saying to you, may I come in and speak to you about this from my perspective. And guess what? His perspective is fantastic. It's totally different than your perspective. Big shock, but you know what? I think sometimes we really don't get how totally different it is. In chapter 6, when I'm talking about hearing from God, I give a little story, and I'm just going to read it to you right here. Hurriedly, she zoomed down the highway toward the airport and her fast-approaching flight time, enjoying the solitude of a quiet car. In the air above, a helicopter pilot watched as two cars collided a few miles ahead of where she was. If only her radio had been tuned in and tuned to the right station, she would have been able to catch her flight by detouring onto one of the exit ramps between her and the blocked highway. Hearing from God is like getting important traffic information before you get hit by life. God flies higher than a helicopter pilot and transmits communication without limitation. Yet the steps to receiving input from him are similar to those required to receiving simple traffic updates. Both require that we believe in their existence, that we believe they are available to help us, and that we know how to access their input, then that we believe their intentions toward us are good. I follow that up with a column, my column, comparison to God and a helicopter pilot. You know, and it's so simplistic that it's almost ridiculous, but the fact is we don't even trust God as much as we trust a Skycam pilot. It's just ridiculous. We trust that pilot to be telling us what we need to know so that we can avoid the traffic hassles up in front of us. We trust him to give us the alternative routes. We trust that he's not making it up and, you know, giving us bogus information. Most Christians do not even trust God that much. When they need direction, when they need help, when they need clarity of thought, they do not trust that God's going to give him as much information as a Skycam pilot. But here's the similarities. The helicopter and the radio station exist. God exists. The pilot is in airspace. God is outside of time and space. The pilot has a great vantage point. God has the best perspective possible. The pilot sees what's ahead before we do. God foresees and foreknows everything. The pilot is commissioned to help commuters avoid unnecessary delays. God is willing and ready to help us avoid unnecessary pain. The radio station makes it incredibly easy for us to access Sky Pilot warnings. God has made it incredibly easy for us to hear his voice. The station and pilot are committed to saving us time and reducing our stress. God loves us more than we love ourselves and is eager to help us. The next time you're experiencing something that you would say is extremely negative or hard for you to handle, pause for just a moment and say, God, talk to me about this from your perspective. We'll be right back, and when we do, we're going to talk about the number one fatal mistake to avoid when trying to grow closer to God. Introducing themillionmileclub.com. Do you travel a lot? Would it make a difference to you if some million milers shared their travel secrets? I thought so. So we started the Million Mile Club for you, for missionaries, for people who travel a lot and could use some insider tips. It's free, it's fun, and it's way helpful. themillionmileclub.com. Hi, this is Marnie. Welcome back. We're going to talk right now about the number one fatal mistake to avoid when trying to grow closer to God and what to replace it with. Well, I spend a lot of time in the book talking about emotions because emotions are truly the thing we're talking about. When we're talking about feeling loved, we're talking about emotions. A feeling is not a fact. A feeling behaves like a fact, but it's not a fact. It's an emotion. It's a feeling. And so it's important for us to understand that feeling loved by God is different from being loved by God. You are loved by God, whether you feel it or not. The intention of the book is to express to you how you can go about feeling loved by God all the time. But in this process of growing closer to God and feeling God's love toward us, there are some things that are going to make it really tough or impossible for us to feel that love. And one of those things is pride. And so in the book, I spend chapter 4 talking about humility as the key to God's heart. It's really important for us to understand how critical humility is to our relationship with God. And you might be saying, well, humility is not that good of a thing. It's kind of like the word in our language, submission. It's not a good word, humility. It sounds weak. It sounds frail. It sounds not very effective. But the fact is that humility is a powerful place to live. I want to just give you two examples of humble people from the Bible. First of all, Moses. Moses was the leader of a nation consisting of over 1 million people. The Bible describes him as a very humble man, more humble than anyone else on the face of earth, And how about Jesus? Jesus was in heaven with God, and he was God himself. He was the third person in the Trinity, but yet he put on the skin of a man and came to live here with us. Amazing humility. Obviously, when God talks about humility, it has nothing to do with weakness. Instead, it has everything to do with being in a relationship of dependency on God. So what's the number one fatal mistake to avoid making when you're trying to grow closer to God and feel his love? It's pride. And I wanted to spend just a couple minutes talking about a couple different angles here, because the first thing that people are prideful about is about the kind of life that they live. And I'm not talking about what you do with your day. I'm talking about the underlying way that you look at your life. And in the book, and on page 34, if you're following along, I talk about how humility leads to real life. And there are two definitions of life. The first one is physical birth, physical life on earth, and physical death. And, you know, even before I go on and tell you what the second one is, I want you to know that you can actually do physical birth, physical life on earth, and physical death without ever recognizing, without ever agreeing, without ever personally owning the fact that there is a God who loves you. You really can. Now, the second kind of life is spiritual life. That involves spiritual birth, spiritual life on earth, and spiritual life for eternity. You cannot possibly do spiritual life without God. But you can go through even your spiritual life without recognizing your dependence on him. And so the first thing I want to tell you is you are dependent on God for your spiritual life. You are even dependent on God for your physical life, even the life that is not based on spirit, that is based on chemicals and on connections and on what the actual cells that are making up your body. It says in the Bible that all things are held together by Jesus Christ. We are completely dependent on him, whether we acknowledge it or not. But for our spiritual life, you can even have spiritual life and not be committed to Christ. I wouldn't say committed to Christ, although that's true. You can have spiritual life and not ever recognize your deep dependence on Jesus Christ, which is crazy, but it's true. At the beginning of chapter 4, I use the analogy of going to an airport with some little kids I was babysitting, and it was before 9/11, and I just let them. I was taking flying lessons at the time, so I had access to the airport. We went over there. I let them climb in and out of some cockpits, and they were just having a great time. But I say that, you know, they crawled in the planes, they pretended they were the pilots, but no flight ever occurred, no engine was ever started. They were just playing in the cockpit. And any time we do life without God's power flowing in and through us, we are playing at life, literally. No wonder we get so frustrated when we don't seem to be getting anywhere. And no wonder it can feel so hollow and empty, as if the engine hasn't even been started. It's like playing in a cockpit. Well, that's the analogy that I use, and I want to just encourage you that the number one fatal mistake to avoid when trying to grow closer to God and feeling his love is to really think that you can do it without him, that somehow you're doing it for him. We hear that all the time, doing it for God. But the reality is that we need his power doing it through us. That's the difference. If he's doing it through us, we can accomplish tremendous things that will make a difference. I have on page 36, I have the distinction between a woman living through the power of God and a woman living with her own power. Here it is. In our own power, a woman living her best, the best she can without God, can achieve great things in her allotted days on earth. But all of them will fade over time, and none will provide eternal rewards. God's power. A woman living through God's power has the ability to do things that will have an effect for eternity while bringing joy to her and everyone around her during the short span of her earthly life. So the number one fatal mistake to make is to be proud, to think that you can or you want to do it without God. And the way to replace that, or the thing to replace it with, is humility, to understand that we are totally dependent on God, whether we acknowledge it or not, and that only as we yield ourselves completely to Him will we have a life that, like I said there, has an effect for eternity while bringing joy to ourselves and everyone around us during the short span of our earthly life. We're going to take one more break and come back and talk about the two power sources available to Christians and why choosing the right one is critical for you today, tomorrow, and from now on. Are you spending too much time at Twitter or frittering away your day at Facebook? Maybe you think you should get involved in social networking but just don't know how. Either way, my same social networking principles can help you, just like they helped me to be able to interact with my thousands of followers at several different sites in just 15 minutes a day. Check it out at Marnie.com. Same social networking success in 15 minutes a day. Are you a speaker ready for some new connections? Join WomenSpeakers.com, the largest online directory of Christian women speakers in the world, currently enjoying over 25,000 hits a day. WomenSpeakers.com is a place for you to showcase your speaking availability to over 10,000 event planners. WomenSpeakers.com is a first-stop preference for leaders who are planning retreats, conferences, luncheons, brunches, and teas. Join us today over at WomenSpeakers.com, both free and paid listings available. Hi, welcome back. We've been having a little technical issues with our dashboard today on Blog Talk Radio, but I'm glad that you're here, glad that you hung with us through this show. We're almost to the end here. I want to give away a book here in just a few minutes, but before we do that, we have two more sections I wanted to go through with you on feeling loved, connecting with God in the minutes you have. First of all, the two power sources available to Christians and why choosing the right one is critical to you today, tomorrow, and forever. On page 35 of the book, I talk about the Olympic cyclist who can pedal over 40 miles per hour compared to the airplane pilot who can fly at 5,000 miles per hour compared to the astronaut who can blast through outer space at 17,000 miles per hour, and how even though they all have to be trained and all of them had to have, you know, good physical capabilities to begin with to do any of those things, the difference really comes from their power source. And we talked about just before break that it's critically important that we understand through humility that doing things through Christ changes everything. It's like the astronaut who's trying to make it to the moon on his own leg power like the cyclist. It's just not going to happen. It's going to be frustrating. It's going to be failure every step of the way. It's going to feel hollow and empty and like I'm wasting my life, because, in fact, he would be wasting his life. He's not going to get to the moon on a bike. But in the right vehicle, with the right power source, with the right training, an astronaut can literally go into outer space and visit the moon or even beyond. That is exactly how it is for us. The power source that we need to be choosing is Jesus Christ. We need to be letting Him flow through our lives, not just one time come into our life and then shut Him into the closet of our heart. That's not going to help too much. It helps in the long run, but it doesn't help in the short run. We got to choose daily to let Him flow through our lives. And Jesus Christ is the power source that we need and that we have the opportunity to have in our lives, which is so awesome. The last thing I wanted to talk to you about today from the book, Feeling Loved, Connecting with God in the Minutes You Have, is how to stop emotional train wrecks before they happen. And this is something that women especially really deal with. Our emotions just get going, and it's tough to get them to stop going, isn't it? I talk about on page 50 the merry-go-round, and that's a great illustration that I have in my head about how, you know, when you get onto a merry-go-round, at first it's kind of hard to get it going, but after it gets going, there's enough centrifugal force going on there that it's scary to jump off. You know that if you jump off, you're probably going to get scunned up a little bit because it's just going fast enough that it's not easy. What happens is that at some point, you know, somebody sticks their shoes over the side of the merry-go-round and does the thunk, thunk, thunk thing until it slows down enough that everybody can get off, and that's the end of the ride. Well, emotions are a lot like a merry-go-round, or I even think sometimes of a roller coaster. Just, you've got this emotion that starts going, and it's really pretty tough to get off of that emotion, to exit the emotion without getting hurt. And I say that, you know, we have our reasons for hanging on to emotions longer than we're supposed to. And I'm going to give you just, you know, I want you to think about a negative emotion, which would be possibly grief, maybe rejection, maybe someone betrayed you. There's so many negative things. Fear. You've got all these negative emotions, and they all have a good place in our hearts. When someone betrays you, you should feel pain. It's not that you shouldn't. You should feel pain. But you shouldn't keep feeling pain and pain and pain and pain and pain and pain and pain as if they're still betraying you this very second, like they did the second they did. At some point, there comes healing. And if that's not happening for you, it's because you've hung on to emotions, and it could even be at the subconscious level, but they're there. And we have reasons for hanging on to emotions. You can not only hang on to negative emotions like that, you can hang on to positive emotions and have them be very damaging because they lead to pride and they lead to the other side. So but what happens is we have some reasons. First of all, external pressure. I say there are pushers in our lives. We have thoughts inside our head and people around us who are telling us to stay on the ride. We hear things like don't make waves or let it run its course. And the reality is sometimes it's just time to get off. Get off of that emotion. Number two, emotions can be fun. Even harmful emotions have addictive qualities. Feeling sorry for ourselves can be gratifying in a way. Harboring vengeful thoughts can make us feel powerful. Finally, we feel stuck. Once we give our minds over to an emotion by thinking about it, thereby adding fuel to the fire, the centrifugal force makes it difficult to let go, even if we really want to release it and move on. So what I have learned with emotions that want to hang on and like move in to stay is that positive affirmations and scripture is wonderful for this. It's the main tool, the sword, and positive affirmations, and these are based on scripture that are really helpful there too. And on page 54 through 57, I have some of those. One thing that I like to do is, you know, there's my secret prayer, you know, God, talk to me about this from your perspective. It's always the first thing you do with an emotion that doesn't seem to want to, you know, be reasonable. But then also another one is God can use this for good. So no matter what emotion I'm having, especially negative emotions, I always want to remember that God can use this for good. The saying that I have that goes along with that is this: everything that comes into my life, Satan wants to use to destroy me. Everything that comes into my life, God wants to use for my good. I choose to give everything to God for good. Well, there's a lot more affirmations in here that you can use. One that I use all the time, I put it a lot of times out on social networking and even as a closing line in my emails or letters, look up more than you look around. And the reason is because God is not fretting about it. You are fretting about it, but God is not fretting about it. And so I just encourage you to do that as you go through life. Grab scripture, grab affirmations, and use those when you're dealing with a tough emotion that doesn't want to let go. There's also a verse that I want to just close with here, Colossians 3:15. I love this verse. It says, "And let from Christ rule, act as an umpire continually in your hearts, deciding and settling with all finality all questions that arise in your minds, and be thankful." And that's the Amplified Version, but Colossians 3:15 is one of my favorite verses because God, through His Spirit, wants to be the umpire in our minds. We do not have to decide for ourselves whether or not we're in trouble. We can run every thought to Jesus and let Him decide with, again, my secret saying, God talks about this from your perspective. As we continue to run our emotions to Jesus, incredibly, just like how grateful we feel when someone else comes to our rescue in our physical lives, we will have that same type of gratitude and dependence on God as He comes to our rescue over and over again in our emotional lives. Well, this is Marnie Swedberg. Thank you for joining me this hour. As soon as we hang up, we're going to draw a winner, and I'll post that out on the website as well as on the social networks. Thank you for sharing this week of book launch for Feeling Loved. I hope you'll get a copy for yourself. I hope you'll consider taking a group through it. Lots of good stuff in here, mostly because the Bible is full of good stuff, and that's where I spend a lot of time. So I hope you have a great day, have a great week, and we'll see you back here next week for a Back to Normal Marnie's Friends. Bye-bye.